Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Telford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there, for maybe the last time.
The last time in 2021, and Mr. Jules Gill.
Sorry, just, I'm glad that Ben Roy added on the addendum of this year. Because have you asked me to tell us, mate? Are you going somewhere? Is this your, like, your leaving announcement thing? But yes, hello everyone, hello there.
Yes, putting this Game of the Year list together was an arduous task. So what we always do every year, which we didn't do last year, and I don't remember why. Maybe it was just because last year was just a bit of a weird upheaval in itself. But we usually go around the office and we ask people who would like to submit a top 10 ranking of the year, which is a weighted ranking. So whatever you put at number one gets 10 points, number two gets 9 points, etc. And everybody sends me their list and I collate stuff, so only I know what the game of the year is. Then we gather people together and we reveal what the actual What Culture Gaming's game of the year is. So some notable people who are involved in this, but we did just ask whoever wants to submit stuff. But it's myself, it's Jules, it's Ben Roy, it's Josh, it's our editors Dan Durkin and James Dowse. And from that, we've got something which we'll see how we go. First off, a bunch of honorable
mentions.
That
really worries me, man. Yeah. You've just got something like, do we actually have a decent game of the year from What Culture? I don't want to be like Cooking Mama Bitcoin Miner. Like,
I would have put at number one. But, I'm not against it either. But okay. We do have a ton of honorable mentions. Some of the people put in there that didn't collate enough points to become in the top 10. So I'll run these down. Honorable mentions are The Forgotten City, The Medium, Dodgeball Academia, Deathloop, Hot Wheels Unleashed, Back for Blood, Oddworld Soulstorm, Far Cry 6, Chernobylite, Mundawn, Guardians of the Galaxy, Little Nightmares 2, Ghost of Goblin Resurrections, No More Heroes 3, and Disco Elysium, The Final Cut. Which, that's... Disco Elysium, I think, would have been in the top 10 if people could have voted for it properly. But at the same time, it's worth mentioning it because it did get a wider console release this year. So, to run down the actual top 10, starting at number 10... is Psychonauts 2, which, Mr. Jules Gill, was your game of the year.
this should be the game of the year. We're doing it in reverse, clearly, and number 10 is the top spot.
The Crash Insane trilogy all over again. Sometimes you just don't get what you want. Sometimes you bring this jam
to my picnic, you wasp. Like, I absolutely loved Psychonauts 2, and I think that after waiting for so very long since the first game to finally play another game that felt like the best, like, coalesced points of the PS2 and Xbox original era of platforming games, it was just a joy from start to finish. I didn't put it down. It was probably like a week and a half solid play, booked a day off just to, like, really get to grip with it on the first day it was out. And I love the humor of the design. I just wish there was more of it. I do love that feeling of, like, being left wanting more from a video game. It's very rare. Usually I'm just like, oh, I'm done with you sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it feels like it was in development for a long, long time. And then when it finally came out, maybe just because it was on Game Pass or because of the fact that it was in development for so long, it felt quite overlooked this year. Like, it was up for one of the main Game of the Year awards, but obviously it didn't get that. I thought it would get Best Direction at the Game Awards and it didn't. What's going on?
A Psychonauts game being overlooked? Oh, no.
Just
colour me surprised.
It's the Blade Runner of the modern day.
Thing is that everyone loves to talk about Psychonauts as being a cult classic, and everyone loves to, like, ban on about how brilliant it is. But it's like, you still find so many people that haven't played it. And I don't know why I can't convince people to play such a brilliant game. Maybe it's the fact that it's that there's something stuck in the mind just saying they're not cool anymore, but they are cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously the art style is awesome. Like, the voice acting is awesome. There's, like, a Jack Black level where he just pops up, like,
amazing. Around a whole level.
And it's like, yeah, like platforming wise, like It Takes Two managed to win Game of the Year. So I'm like, well, people did check this stuff out. But for whatever reason, Psychonauts 2 largely overlooked and just managed to secure the 10th spot. So in at number 9 is Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, another platformer, which is managing to to succeed.
Doing the dirty to us this year.
Psychonauts 2, though. And Ratchet & Clank got on there mainly because of me putting it very, very high. It was also up there because of Mr. Dare, James Dowson, Dan Durkin. I'm a huge Ratchet & Clank fan, but I think that Rift Apart is one of the first titles to showcase what a PS5 can do. I think that the thing that does that best is the new Matrix demo, but like obviously that doesn't qualify. And it was a game of the year, but Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, just super solid 3D platforming. Love the shooting in it. Love the semi-open world stuff they put in there. And I just think that game goes. I know either of you guys didn't have it very high, so I'm not going to hang on this too much.
I'm just going to say, you can't have it on your list if you don't have a PS5. That's what I'm saying, lads. That's what I'm saying. I would love this game. This would be up there, but unfortunately, I defer to Ben Roy.
Yes, Mr. Ben Roy, I know you're not a massive Ratchet & Clank fan.
Much like Psychonauts, I don't really like that franchise. So I played a bit of Psychonauts and just like, yeah, I'll come back to it in what I like to call the dead week, the week between Christmas and New Year's, when everything is just silent and there's just...
It's a good time, isn't it?
The poor people that have to work, endure the dead week in retail are the ones that really working. But we've been there. But yeah, I didn't even pick up Ratchet & Clank, I'm not going to be honest. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I didn't pick it up. I just knew it wasn't going to be for me, and I abstained from voting for it, and in doing that, I probably kneecapped it in a way.
That only managed to get in total 11 points, largely for me, but at least it's got in the top 10. It is a top 10.
Wait,
of the year.
That got 11 points, so I'm wondering, I need to talk to Josh Brown where he put, ask where he put The Forgotten City, because I had that game quite high, and the fact that that game didn't break our top 10.
His Forgotten City was in the 10th spot, so he gave it 1 point.
Wow.
I was surprised by that too.
For notes here for everyone who's listening, I had it at number 3.
You did? Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I had Forgotten City quite high as well, but then once I started kind of totting stuff up, it started dropping down a bit. But that's an honourable mention. That's not a top 10. What is in at number 8 is It Takes Two, something that we all played, something that won the main Game Award, something that is a very, very ludicrously long game. It just feels like, for me, it overstays its welcome. I never finished it, but I feel like I did put in about 20 hours. But Benroy, you did eventually get through it.
I loved it. I saw it all through in what I call adventurous chunks, where it felt like we were playing 10 hours a time, where we went through 74 different game modes as this game just carried on going on. It went from like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, where you sort of like suck out a Hoover's eyeballs, to when you're now in a garden riding spiders at one point, and then you're in a mystical snow world, and then you're fighting some cockney monkey toy thing in space at one point. It goes places. I loved it. And it's so much better than I think A Way Out was. And now I'm here for wherever Joseph Farris wants to. Is it Joseph Farris?
Joseph Farris. Whatever he wants to do. Yeah,
whenever he wants to screw the Oscars in the future, I'm there for him.
I love everybody just rejoicing in his trajectory, like 2017, man's middle finger into the camera, F the Oscars, whatever, and then now he's walking away with the main game award, with It Takes Two winning Game of the Year. But it is an hour Game of the Year. Going to number 7 is Sable, something that I managed to get up here because of me and Josh. Sable, I would say, it was in my top 3. It's a beautiful little game. Cel-shaded open world, very Breath of the Wild. There's no combat in it whatsoever. It's just about exploring, getting a little glider bike and going out there and sort of finding different parts for it. And just like finding different puzzles to complete. It is very free form. It's up to you when you want to finish it. Because you just go out there, you leave your tribe. It's all about the character of Sable just finding purpose in the open world and talking to different people and crafting a mask. You want to try and find a mask that represents a different set of people and then bring it back to your tribe. And it's up to you whenever you want to do that. So I spent about 12 hours in it. It launched quite rough, but 12 hours was enough for me to feel like I got my fill. I know Josh ended up doing 20 or 30 hours worth, because there is quite a lot to do if you want to comb everything. But I still feel like I got a lot out of it. But the thing with that game is that it has such a gorgeous sense of flow. It just goes, and it looks gorgeous. And it's such a tranquil thing. And it's scored by Japanese Breakfast, too. I know, like Josh keeps mentioning, is like his album of the year, because they're like a really solid band as well. So yeah, Sable is in our number 7. Number 6 is Metroid Dread, flying in, slightly higher than it was after Mr. Jules submitted his ranking to bump it up a bit. As one of the only two people that played Metroid Dread this year, Jules Gill.
I'm a bit disappointed it's not actually ranked higher, but I can understand why, because not everyone's got a Switch or likes the franchise. But seriously, in terms of like level design, in terms of how it expands on the sort of mythology of the entire Metroid franchise. I love the fact that it just was like, oh, you thought you knew what this was all about? Ah, just flip it on its head just for a bit of bants in it. Just a bit of a laugh. The enemies in it as well, the new... the robots that chase you all the way through the levels, they are really fun and challenge. Yeah, the Emmys, that's it. Mm. And then you've got obviously the boss battles themselves. That final boss battle might be one of the most enjoyable experiences I've had in a long time.
It's because so I tight.
Well, that's the thing. I got my ass handed to me again and again and again. But then it was like that thing of like, I'm not being told by the game how to beat this. I just have to remember all of the skills that I've got up until this point and apply them in slightly different like scenarios. Mm. And it was like, oh, this is so satisfying to have finally taken him down. So,
well, yeah, great times. I thought, because like, Metroid Dread is my game of the year. Like nothing came like close to that in terms of just how much I devoured something this year. And I think it's so tight. I think for the fact that it's running on the Switch, but it's just so liquid butter smooth. I'm pretty sure it is 60 FPS, but it feels like it anyway. But it's just so easy to play. And I like the obviously the rollout of upgrades that you get. But the thing that elevates it for me, obviously, it is the production values across the board, gameplay-wise. But the boss battles, like you said, the final one is a standout one. But nearly every boss battle has this really cool like set-piece thing or like set-piece kill that you can do or secret way to beat someone. But it has that like added like level of cinematics that I feel like Metroid's never had before that just elevates it. And I know it's not Nintendo, it's Mercury Steam, but still them combined, it's such a solid game.
Just a massive shout out to the level designers as well, because the fact that I was exploring all the time and never felt lost at all. Wherever I was going, the game was hinting or pushing me towards certain areas because of visual clues in the background, like, oh, this area is too hot, you're going to need like a suit that deals with the cold or vice versa. And like, I don't know how they did it, because my brain always thinks of like, oh, maybe I should go this way instead of going this way. And I must have been receiving visual stimuli to prompt me to go and explore off in these areas. Like, I never actively sat and thought, I wonder where I go next. I just go, oh, well, there's a lot of stuff on the map that still is yet to explore. So I just go to this area across these things.
Like, I saw people in the aftermath of when the critic reviews dropped and like the general reception to it, people going like, oh my God, I'm so lost. Like one of the first times it was trending was people saying that they were all lost. And I was like, I never got lost. I always thought that it did a really good job of, like you said, invisible hand guiding you to the next place. Even when I thought I was lost, I would stumble upon like a little mini cutscene, the talking head section or whatever, when you talk to that computer, and I'll be like, oh, this is the main path, or this is a valid way to go, and then I'd unlock something else that would factor back into the level, and just goes in a way that a Metroid game hasn't since, I guess, Metroid Fusion or something, and it just is arguably the best Metroid of all time. Like, it's right up there with Super. I think in the way that it pays off at the end, like, not to go into spoilers, is this massive overblown power fantasy thing that fans have been waiting for decades, and it was very, very good to see. Only got to number 6 though, so number 5 is Hitman 3, something that I barely even had on my top 10, but Mr. Benroy had it very high indeed.
The good on you, Benroy.
The best Hitman game, the best Hitman game ever made, because that was Hitman 2016, and then that was very much Hitman 2, and then Hitman, they just, every time they kept building on the system, sure, Hitman 2 was a bit, it seemed like a bit of a wet fart in the wind, where it didn't really catch the world on fire, I guess, but it's still like technically sound. And then in this one, it seems like the lesson, and it's weird in a way, because it was almost the swan song, like, okay, we've tried this for so long now, and 20 years later, Hitman's not really doing it for us being IO, and after they wrestled the franchise back and everything. And then it goes out and not only lands at the perfect time where everyone wants a video game, so they buy it, but it's probably, if like, there are some decent levels in the first one, and obviously like Blood Money's legendary, and like some people love Silence, the original Hitman 2, and some people love the original Hitman 3, but this one
Hitman
for me
is my favorite,
it just hit on so many levels, and I love the Bondian like final level, even though that's like sort of a bit out of left turn. Like, I'm glad we had that rather than like some sniper missions in the other games, but when you can get all the other games into this game as well, it's just, you can't ask for any more. And also, a bit selfishly, this one has a platinum trophy as well. So finally we get, in this new trilogy, we finally get to show our love in that respect. But no, I can't say good enough. And then just the second level could be its whole game on its own, with the mansion, the stately home.
That level, and I love it specifically because of the fact that from where I'm from, it's actually only half an hour away from where I live in Dartmoor. Like, so I was it's not a real mansion. But the setting of it being in Dartmoor, I was like, oh yeah, walking around, it's like, where's all the kids with the spray cans, like drinking cider down by the bus stop?
If they ever do a Hitman level where you've just got to take out a whole bunch of unruly child halves, then maybe that would be a great expansion.
I was requesting for ages that somebody make a mod of just a bold guy with a beard so we could insert me into the game. You got to kill me as a Kitman contract.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've played much 12 Minutes, but you are in 12 Minutes. You are the character that Willem Dafoe plays is basically just a cell-shaded Jules.
It's a bald man with a beard, but every time he turns up, it's like, well, that looks a lot like Jules.
Yeah.
I've heard some pretty interesting things.
It's not
about
good. Don't play it, but okay, look at a YouTube video.
Do I at least play
a
good character in it, or am I a bad guy?
He's all right. Yeah.
Oh, no.
He's an interesting character, but the model, it just, you could say that's you as a model. And
I mean, it's top down.
Let's rip the assets from it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's easy enough to like identify as you. But yeah, for Hitman 3, it's immaculate. I mean, it's immaculate for what it does. For me, I wanted a bit more from the story side of things. But if you just go down the gameplay route, like, it is this perfect trilogy capper. Like, it just... Hitman is like a platform, is insane. Like, you look at how far they've come. The NoClip documentary on IO that Danny O'Dwyer put together is like a must watch, considering how far they've come as a studio and the amount they had to soft reboot the stuff with Square Enix, then going their own way and, like, you know, managing to sort of set up this platform that they can plug stuff into and doing all the little time challenges and everything. I think it's an insane lifetime achievement. And for me, I wanted a bit more from the overall package than just kind of more levels. But still, if you're getting more levels in one of the best games of all time, there's nothing wrong with that. No. Number four is Forza Horizon 5, something that got on here mostly because of Durkin and Douse. They both bloody loved Forza Horizon 5. I thought it was just more Forza Horizon. And I've played like a hell of a lot of Forza Horizon 4, so I didn't put 5 very high.
Been chatting to them about this because they occasionally will bring up how great it is. Yeah. And like, obviously, Dow's absolutely schooled us all when it came to naming Xbox exclusive titles and just listed off every single Forza game going. And to be fair, absolutely agree with him in certain things, because like, it is like the Hitman thing, it's the culmination of all of their best efforts. It's everything that they've been polishing to create this refined diamond of an experience. Yes. You're not going to get a better Forza Horizon, I think, personally.
No, and the thing is as well, I mean, like, the thing that I bounced off it for was that it was so close to 4. Like, it opens with the exact same beats, the same slow motion jumps, the same, like, approach to it. And then when they put you out in the open world, it's like, okay, go do all these challenges again. And I was like, I've done so much of this across, like, 3, 4, and now 5. So I personally bounced off it a bit. But that's not to say that it's not an immaculate execution of that formula. Like, it is, like you said, the best version of it. And it is the most over-the-top version of it. Like, the game opens on a volcano. You're just, like, stunting around a volcano.
Yeah. You do not mess around.
Yeah, and obviously it looks gorgeous. The physics model is very solid. They've added, like, you know, more stunt jumps and more over-the-top stuff too. Because it feels like they're kind of chasing the Burnout, like what Burnout used to be. And I'm like, you can do a little bit of Burnout. Like, I'd love full Burnout, but I'll take a little bit of it.
Yeah, a wee bit of Burnout.
I can appreciate it, but at the same time, like, I'm not a carsman. I'll play a race when I'm seeing some friends at Christmas, because I don't have any room on my Xbox, because my Xbox is half Gears 5 as it is at this point anyway. So.
Well, still, I mean, Forza Horizon 5, though, considering that the Horizon, like, spin-off is now kind of what people just think of when you say Forza, like, the main series has completely dropped off. And I think that's a testament to how solid these are as packages. Number three, though, is Returnal. Something that's very much up here because of Josh Brown. But Benroy, you had it pretty high too. I think you did anyway. But yeah, also James Dowse, it was his game of the year, which I had Returnal. I think it was at like 4 or something. I didn't have it very high because that game was cruel to me. And I didn't have a nice time with it, but it's still a robust package. But Benroy, what do you think?
Returnal is one of those ones where it came out at the beginning of the year, or like sort of like the Q1-ish, and that's like, yeah, I'll get to that eventually. And when it came time to get to it, I was like, and then thankfully Far Cry 6 pulled me away for a bit, and I spent Alan Wake, and I spent all the hours, and then it's like, it's time to go back to Returnal. And then going back to it and getting into sort of the rhythm and find out not only how well it plays, but how cruel it can be with the whole, you're dead, lol, goodbye. And,
do it again.
And I don't know, it consumed me the way I feel like I spoke to, it consumed me, you and Josh, especially in different ways. Mm-hmm. It was funny how we both, like, Josh went through the whole
I can't imagine, he reviewed it. I would have lost my mind trying to review that game.
Yeah, that was imagine it's just like hitting your head against the wall again and again and just hoping that you make it through so you can actually see the next bit of content.
Yeah,
to actually
I had an eye on breakdown, just being like, is this it? Is this the game that I can't beat? And just being like, I hated so many parts of that game.
And I had one problem with like a single puzzle in RE8 when I was reviewing. I was like, I'm so scared, I'm not gonna get this done. I'll just stumped for 20 minutes on a puzzle. I can't imagine reviewing that game. And
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, but got to the end. I conquered it, and I feel like a changed human after that. I can't wait to take this game from one end of the country to the other, hand it to my friend and let him borrow it, and then listen to his trials
his
as he...
Drop.
Yeah.
It'll be once you get back on the train, you can just hear his screams, and you're just laughing to yourself, like, like a little Machiavellian evil that, like, doing the finger temple.
It's like what I did with Sekiro when I let it to Zoe, and then I still haven't asked for it back. It's just like...
That's pretty why she moved away. She's like,
she got in touch with me recently and just said, I've been very, very ill recently, and it's just that, like, I think you've done that to her, mate.
Yeah, dragon rot. Yeah. But this game, so when we talk about things being snubbed, I feel like Returnal probably didn't get enough spotlight, and is it probably deserved this year? I think, like, it deserved a lot more than other Sony titles this year, but I can't wait to see what House might do next, and I prefer this rather to their sort of side scrollers.
I actually did think that Returnal was actually not marketed very well, because every single bit of, like, footage that you see from the trailers paints it as being just a generic third person action shooter. It's not like
the Sony game.
It's not showing you that it's like how's the best way to describe it without using a very common analogy that is this? It's just an incredibly hard loop-based shooter. That's the gimmick it's
going
for.
The thing is, like, that's kind of one of my reasons, because I think that it's very, like, they're very intentionally going for a very specific type of game. It's very run-based. They want to make it so that your average runs are quite long. And the thing you're carrying between runs is weapon XP. It's nothing else. So you're like, you know, next time you find X weapon, it has X additional abilities that you didn't have before. But you're not changing much as Celine. You literally just need to bank time to be able to get the right level of weapon to get through.
You could imagine this being an arcade game where it's designed to suck your coins away, but the one thing that I just, why it's probably not higher on my list is starting again with just a crap pistol that
after you've got all the great weapons.
Yeah, I can take it all, but like if I could just choose, if you had a few of them are like in the ship, if I could just have the most basic of assault rifle or the other sort of like a few other guns rather than just that, then it would have changed so much for me. But because you are just given the singular crap pistol, and even though I like the pistol sometimes, but when you're swarmed, you just want I feel like you just want an assault rifle and just.
No, I think you should have been able to unlock a different starting weapon eventually, like 20, 30 something hours in. The thing as well is that they couldn't give much away in the marketing about story wise about what this is really about, what's really going on. And I think the story side of it, the lore side of it, is actually really fascinating. Like, you don't get any remote like story thing until you're three biomes in, and you get a bit of it, and then three more biomes, you get everything. If you manage to make it that far. Which last I checked, 23% of people beat the final boss. So it's
and then
not
you got the secret ending, which is the only one that ending. Actually like so, be explain what's going on.
Yeah, so like my whole thing was like, if they'd seeded what was really going on earlier, you'd have way more drive to put up with some of the BS, and you might more of us might have got through it. I mean, we're saying this about number three game of the year. I still think that to focus entirely on the positives, it plays very, very well. Like it is the fact that it's loop is in its favor. Like you didn't dive back in. Yeah.
Did I guess our top three then in like? When I said yes there, I said, yeah, I think I have.
I think you might have done, yeah. Well, no, you probably didn't actually because...
What's number two then, Scott?
Number two is Halo Infinite. A very last minute
conclusion. Okay, right. I am going to say this. I absolutely love Halo Infinite and I've had an absolute blast, but that is bollocks, right?
What do you mean?
Because like it is a very good game, but there's a lot wrong with it. Like,
well, there was a lot like, wrong
the,
with...
The fact is, right, at the time of recording, even though we are getting a Slayer playlist today, a Slay list, as you might call
very
it.
Very good, yeah. There's also a free-for-all one.
That's an update that was sorely needed day one. We've been struggling with the multiplayer. The multiplayer is actually letting this game down at the moment.
Look, don't blame me.
Oh, I'm getting angry now, man.
It was Mr. Dan Durkin's game of the year. It was Mr. James Dowser's number two game of the year, which was enough to get it very high anyway. And then it was also on Mr. Ben Roy's list. It was in at number four. And then for me, I think I had it at number two or three.
Don't get me wrong. Like I rate this game really highly. I put it on my list as well. But the problem is that it's like... You and I were talking about this before. It's Far Cry with a Halo skin. In terms of the campaign expands out in the open world mentality, it is incredibly well made. It is liquid smooth. I absolutely love how tight the gameplay is. But are we saying this is the potentially one of the best experiences that you can have?
I would say, yeah. I would say the multiplayer in some way, like progression and trust me, I've had some bad playlists in my time. You play Battlefront 2 where you start on like, what is it, the half level. You know, you're going to be playing 2 hours before you can get to the Kessel Run map. But like, and they never changed that in like 4 years. It's still going now. But like playing those games and just jumping in and being like, okay, I'm still not crap at Halo. And then getting in there, like, where I can get on the Warthog or just enjoy some small teams. The only time I have a bad time is when I'm trying to get those juice boys in the juice box and no one is doing it. And I get so I get so angry. Or
you pop the old Capri Suns back.
But
in the box.
The act of playing this game is one of my favorite acts of this year. I would say the campaign that I have just gotten into the wider world, we will say.
The campaign takes time to kick in. Yeah.
It's not blowing me away. And I do hate how they're like, they do a bit of like, they almost need a Star Wars crawl at the beginning rather like say, and then Cortana's over here somewhere. We might have beaten her up. We might not. Who knows? And then
any game that starts with saying, hey, lads, you remember Halo 1 through to 5? Well, you don't need to play all of them. You actually need to play Halo Wars 2. Like, yeah, it's just the, like, come on, lads.
The thing is, like, I think
stuff that I kind of appreciate in a way. Like, I played Halo Wars 2, but I didn't necessarily take it all in. Like, there's a good, you could play Halo Wars 2, right? Where that you can play the cult where what I did, where my friends just built stuff for me and I just sent all the units in, so I just didn't have to do any of the building stuff. So I got to experience the fighting in that game.
You can just
the story.
Watch the cutscenes for Halo Wars 2, because all you need to know about is Atriox. Atriox is by far the best villain in Halo since like Halo 2 or 3. So it's like that was the best card they could play. And like I've been rallying against Halo Infinite since it came out, because that beta period was not a beta period. They were charging money for it, and at launch it didn't change at all.
It was a beta period.
It absolutely was not. There's no changes in the code from the early access period to what was actually the launch day thing. It was the same thing. But if we're just talking about the literal gameplay side of it, we're just talking about the map variety, we're talking about the way the campaign rolls out. I think the campaign takes a couple hours to get going, but once you do hit a sweet spot with it, it is a really nice mix of semi-open, well, it is largely open world stuff, but it's in chunks, like the full map is in chunks. And in between that, you also have like classic Halo levels where you're going underground, you're doing more specific corridor-based stuff, and then you come back out into the open world, then you go back down into another level. And I feel like they've mixed that stuff really well. And, you know, combine all of that with the best Halo has ever played, like with some of the best weapons they ever had and the best feel. Yeah, I can see it as one of the absolute best games of the year. I've put 65 hours into it now. Like, yeah. I mean, I've played nothing else since it was available.
Don't get me wrong. It sounds like I'm harshing on it, but I'm in love. I'm besotted with this game because the fact that I'm playing it like just constantly anytime I've got a free 10 minutes or so. But I'm still
I know what you mean. There's been so much head around to it.
Like being this, the best game of the year seems very mad.
It's
very close to being.
It's taken my PUBG time away. There's no PUBG anymore. It's just Halo Infinite with me and my friends. And like, I'm saving the camp. Like, I've done a fair bit of the, well, I say fair bit, but I've done a chunk of the campaign. I'm saving it for the dead week, as I say, and then we're all sort of like off work and I can't wait to get back to it. And of the, like, just like other things, like say other games like Deathloop, I played them through the end, they've already washed away, and I kind of
Deathloop didn't even make our top 10. It barely got enough points.
It's just Halo in such a way that there's so much runness. I feel like it's a, if anything, it's a foundation from where we can now rebuild. Like we've had our troubled time, we've had Halo trying to go some other ways, and I can kind of like smell where the story might be going. I'm just excited for what they can do. Now we've gone through this all trouble period, and we've got that sprayer out, and we sprayed all the last bit of Don Matrick off everything now, and now we can move on into this new era. We've air blasted all the last bit of Don away, and now we can go forward, and hopefully with decent guiding hands, and this being the platform for the next decade. So how old are we all now? I'll check in. I'm 30. Scott, how old are you?
Friend.
And Jules?
Say again, mate. Sorry, you cut out there.
How old are you now, Jules?
I'm 34 years old.
So we'll all be in our
40s. So very tired.
We'll all be in our 40s when the next era of Halo starts. Oh, so God, this is our Halo for the next 10 years. So
they did say this. Just,
I think you just killed me there, Ben.
This is a game of the century or whatever. But like, yeah, I think if you... That's the thing. It was always the thing. Like, all the complaints about Halo Infinite from day one were entirely other than the gameplay. That was always the weird little caveat, was that we're sort of sideswiping the fact that the gameplay, everything you do in that game is immaculate. It's everything else that sucks. And I think that is almost like a sad indictment on the state of the industry, that we have to sideswipe the other stuff to say that this can be one of the best games of the year. But if you take that statement literally, the gameplay is some of the best gameplay of the year. So I can see the argument for it. Plus, I think when the campaign starts to click and you get new abilities and stuff, like the grapple punch is like one of the most fun things.
Yeah, I mean, to different be fair, shield upgrades. It's hilarious.
Yeah, like the repulsor.
So Falcon one punch.
You just absolutely level them. You can like punch a warthog apart, and it's just like you start absolutely flying in that game. It just starts to go in a way that it needed to from earlier, but it does get there.
I got such a decent run with the grapple hook and the hammer yesterday. So many tortured souls at the hands of my hammer.
It
was great.
But everyone talks about, oh, it's emergent gameplay. And like, but it's not until you realize you're in a little pocket of it that you realize how satisfying that can be. It's like, oh, I made this come together. And this combination of things that I picked up, or the way enemies came together, the way the AI chased after you and went into some little ravine, and you had like a one-on-one or something with like a hunter or whatever. But like I said, I think it gets there. I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And the day that we're recording this, there's another update coming out. But that's all ancillary, you can argue, to the fact that the core gameplay has been stellar since moment one. So we'll have to focus on that, because regardless of anything, it became our number two, which means that number one is Resident Evil Village, something that I had at number nine, but everybody else had way up top. So it ended up getting number one anyway. Ben was grinning like a little chimp.
I you tell me who was voting in this, and I could smell it yesterday through our Slack. And I said to you, this is going to be our top three games in some sort of order. And I was like, Resident Evil, Halo, and Returnal. Was Returnal three or four?
Returnal was number three.
Oh, yeah. So, It's weird, isn't it? Because you'd expect the Resident Evil guys to have the Resident Evil game at number one when the past I didn't have number two at number one, number three. But this, for some reason, this
is... RE2 was so good. RE2 is better than this. But that's this conversation for another time.
I mean, that's our... But it came out of the year of Death Stranding and Control. Mm, like, so that's true, like... True.
That was 2 years ago. Just to take stock for a second.
That was a long time ago. But the infusion of so many different elements of Resident Evil here, but with now the cast of the Rogues Gallery we have of like boss characters within them, when we sit down at a table or we're in a church or wherever we are, and mixing new elements where it'd be like werewolves, but you know, keeping it in the science realm rather than sort of like going in magic.
Even I do love how much they flesh stuff out. Yeah.
There is some magic in
they
it.
Just do whatever just they like, want at this stage.
Yeah, it's just that, oh, it's just the new, it's just Heisenberg just had some different meth this
it's
a, day.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's the G-virus, it's the T-virus, yeah. It's the flying virus. Like,
yeah. Rather, yeah. For these, I'll just say, I'll keep it short so I can pass it to you, but these like games where this game was so, I get so like the first time with a weird thing recently, where I get scared in these games and I play through, and then afterwards it becomes a mechanical thing where I'm trying to like find all the bits I need to fully upgrade stuff, and how you could go from bit around the map. And I'm glad it wasn't like properly open world. I wish you could go back to some areas a bit more, like say they cut off some of the best bits of the game very quickly, and it suffers a bit of what Resident Evil 4 does, where like say the last area is a bit okay, let's just get through this, but a bit sort of like one note in a way.
It goes through the motions because it knows it's already amped up the thing so much so that it can only deliver by keeping that constant high of like action and intensity. And it's just like its environments shape the emotion rather than the other way around.
The bit with towards the end where it just becomes like a big mech battle, and it's just like, yeah, okay, like you okay, like okay, like we've done things like this before. But yeah.
I will absolutely state though, I don't like Resident Evil 6. I've made that very, very clear, because of the fact that I felt like it was too much like the Fast and the Furious had taken over the franchise.
That's actually not,
and I think that this is like the Hobbs and Shaw of Resident Evil, and that is a film I did like, because just silly enough and not taking itself too seriously in all of the right places that it became a thoroughly enjoyable experience that still managed to have a few scares here and there.
They're still madly serious at some points as well, which is weird. Yeah.
But the thing is that it plays it straight, but that to me is pure comedy. So it's just kind of like...
Got like a weird, like it's almost like Resident Evil is like its own tone now. Like if you're ever like sitting with someone who hasn't watched a Resident Evil, like whether it was one of the movies or whether you're playing one of the games, and there's things start happening, scenes start unfolding, one-liners get said or whatever, and you kind of think to yourself, oh, you're explaining to them like, well, that's just what Resident Evil is. It's kind of like its own thing now.
Have you noticed that Capcom, as like a publisher, has like the most whiplash tonal things within their projects? Like, I know that they don't have a hand in developing all of them, but it just seems to be very weird that they seem to attract these games like your what's the game that I'm always banging on about? Dead Rising. It's like the perfect example of it. It's like horror one minute, but sheer comedy the next. And then you've got like Devil May Cry, serious melodrama, and then crazy like hack and slash adventuring sort of style.
Well, that's kind of thing with this. It's like bits and pieces of like all of a sudden you're thrown into like a slow burn corridor crawl, but you're being hunted by someone, but it's all about like being stalked or whatever. Then it's a full on action set piece against a flying thing, or you're against some giant half frog man who's spitting like acid everywhere, and
the
it's just like.
But
it can do those
no matter what. It's no matter what you're doing, it's entertainment. What they've done is they've taken each scenario and just thought, no, if we played it straight or too silly in certain things, we'd ruin the enjoyment for the people here if we tried to keep it consistent. Go mad, have it like peaks and troughs. Go.
And I think like in terms of like literal raw gameplay, like it's easily the best play. Like the fact that they transitioned to first person only 4 years ago and now they've nigh on perfected it, like the feel of gameplay here, it reminds me of Metal Gear Solid 5 just being so chunky and responsive and like easy to play. And I feel like they've embraced the fact that people are going to replay these games. Like there are so many, like Benro, you went through it a bunch of different times, you get so many different rewards like by running it over and over again. But yeah, it's worth saying that Resident Evil Village was Mr. Dan Durkin's number two. It wasn't on James Dowse's list at all, but it's Josh's number two as well. Benro, it was your game of the year, and for me it was down at like number 8 or 9 or something, because I didn't like the story, but I still think that it plays incredibly well, so it managed to get up there anyway. So War Culture Gaming's game of the year is Resident Evil Village. I will quickly down everything else. So 10 to 1 is Psychonauts 2, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, It Takes Two, Sable, Metroid Dread, Hitman 3, Forza Horizon 5, Returnal, Halo Infinite, and Resident Evil Village. Now that's a nice selection. I would say
that is good, actually. I like this. There's a lot of different genres all over the place there.
I just wish the Forgotten City somehow managed to sneak in there.
Forgotten City is our most honourable of mentions alongside The Medium, alongside Dodgeball Academia, and everything else that I said at the start. So there's a lot of different things for people to get stuck into, but thank you all very much for listening. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. We'll catch you in 2022. For now, Ivan Scott, also joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Play Unpacking.
Oh, you should play Unpacking. That should be an honourable mention as well. Yeah. And Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, everybody.
Have an amazing rest of your year.
Bye. Next year. Bye.
Good night.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.